The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Pastor Mai, good afternoon. Welcome to Man in Line on Manx Radio. We're open line today through till 1, so the floor's yours. Whatever you want to talk about, call 66 13 68. WhatsApp or text 166177 or email studio@manxradio.com. Well, the health minister says she's disappointed to hear her predecessor make personal and inflammatory remarks about her. Talking about Laurie Hooper and what he had to say. And what do you think of the Isle of Man Reproductive Rights Bill, currently awaiting royal assent? It aims to bring in the Isle of Man in line with the UK and its Fertilisation and Embryology Act of 2008. Currently, same-sex partners aren't automatically recognised as parents when a baby is born through fertility treatment like IVF. Only the birth mother and genetic father can register as parents on the birth certificate. Any thoughts about that or anything else, to be quite honest? It's Friday. Anything will go today. Call, text, email and WhatsApp. And David's first with us today. Hi, David.
Hi, Randy. I'm just going out this afternoon or tomorrow to get a blue ribbon because I'm now making 3.5 kilowatts on my panels, shunting it into the battery, which is a 10-kilowatt capacity, which I think is actually wonderful. And when you look at it at a small scale, I've only got a three-bedroom bungalow living in Onken. Great. And it's not even bright today. There's not much sun. You don't need sun. You just need the rays to make the power. So why aren't we doing it everywhere else? And my other little whinge today, because Parliament's now finished, is what's going on with the nurses' home there? What's gone on there? And if they're saying that the DOI owns them, are they a landlord? They've got to be a landlord then. They can't operate otherwise, can they?
Well, you would have thought, as you say, somebody has to own them. So
the taxpayers paid for it for a start.
Yeah.
So we're indirectly, if you could say it, everybody on the Isle of Man, 80,000 of us, have paid money or dues into that, 50,000 or whatever. Anyway, paid money into that the Treasury used to fund the Housing Board, don't we? This unknown organisation, which we know something about them, but we don't know a lot about them. And what are they actually doing? Why won't they make a statement back to Manx Radio?
And the trouble is, I'll be honest with you, I've had half a dozen people in touch with me about the Manx Development Corporation and what it is they represent or what they're going to do. And one person, I said, and this is purely conjecture, this is purely skeet, it was suggested that the Manx Development Corporation has developed the nurses' home to sell it on. So that somebody comes in and buys it, and consequently they'll make a big profit on it and can show a profit to their shareholder, which is the Treasury. Now, so you just wonder, is the Manx Development Corporation, are they kind of a semi-state property development company, or is it for the people? And particularly as this whole of Domain Road is going to be, the Kensington Road Village or whatever it's going to be called, the place where nobody's going to own a car, apparently.
And I hate the thing about, I don't know, older people call us senior citizens. And you're going to be saying the same thing. Can you see the senior citizens if they rent one of the places? A, do we know what, is it an anti-competitive practice that government is actually acting against local authorities, acting against private landlords, how much they charge in rent, and is it a fixed-term tenancy? Where some of the residents now and local authorities have theirs recalculated for a 5-year tenancy because of government regulations.
And talking of solar panels as well, weren't they going to be quite keen on putting them on Nobles Hospital at one time and the schools? Now, has anything happened with that?
No, but I'm led to believe by my spies that Manx Radio, you've got a builder in there now, but there was I'm led to believe, I was talking to one of the guys, he must have quoted for your panels, but maybe didn't get it. But he said to me today, by the way, Quirky, Manx Radio are going to have panels on the roof shortly as well.
We've got the panels on the roof. The panels are there. I don't know whether they're connected up, but the panels are... We've got the builders in, apparently, because they're fixing the roof now. I don't know. We used to have a flat roof, didn't we?
Yeah,
but we've got solar panels now. We'll soon be solar-powered.
Yeah, well... I mean, that's the way to go, isn't it? If you look at all the schools we've got, all the public buildings we've got, if we invest some of the money that we've got into doing this, all summer, the kids are on holiday next week, aren't they? There's probably about, what, 5-6 weeks there.
Yeah, they break
those
up today.
Powers, yeah, they can be shunting the power like I'm going to be doing when I charge my batteries up. I'm putting it out to the internet. I've even had the fella across the road said, can he run the cable over?
So are you selling back to Manx Utilities?
7p. I know
it's gone down. It used to be 9p.
Well, I'm waiting. I haven't got the contract yet, although I've got it. My app's coming this afternoon, so I can check on it, whether it's going into the house, going into the network, and how much we've done. I had a smart meter put in a couple of weeks ago, so the MEA can check what I'm getting up to, in case I'm selling it somewhere else, because they're entitled to the power that goes down the grid or something. I don't know. But anyway, you'll have one your same, won't you? When you get your panels up and running in charge, who's going to be in charge of looking after the panels?
Oh, it's the boys in black. The engineering, the IT crew, they're in charge of all that stuff.
Well, they can put a model up, couldn't they? And then we could find out how much Manx Radio are putting back to themselves, back to the grid, or just selling.
I just hope, David. Yeah. You know how breezy it gets on Douglas Head. I hope they've weighted them down. That's all I'll say.
They'd be fine. And listen, the other little rumour too is, what's going on about the tarmac that can't be dumped at Turkeyland? There's something afoot in the waste management unit because I believe the manager's jacked in and gone somewhere else.
Well, that's DOI, isn't it? And waste management's DOI.
Yeah, and it, I don't know. She's got that many balls in the air at the minute. We're not getting them on the ground to get them sorted out, are we?
Okay.
And it'll leave contractors, including the DOI itself. Where are they putting their tarmac? Eh?
That's a thought. I wonder where.
And have they got a license? Like all the other contractors have to have a license.
I'm sure they've got that completely sorted out, David.
Well, we'll see.
All right. Have a good weekend.
See you, boy. Bye-bye.
Cheers now. 14 minutes past 12. Juliet joins us now. Hi, Juliet.
Hello there. Hello.
What's on your mind?
I was ringing up entirely unsolicited. I'm not connected, I promise, with anyone at all in the theatre, but my husband and I went to see The Little Shop of Horrors at the Gaiety last night.
Oh, how was it?
It was absolutely amazing. We had these rather professional and interesting friends coming over to visit the island for a little holiday, and they are in the film production business and know their onions, and they'd been a couple of nights ago and said to us, you're not going to miss The Little Shop, are you? Because it was absolutely brilliant. We were blown away. We thought it would be very amateur, and we just went for fun, and we couldn't believe how good it was. And we thought, well, you know, they're really quite sophisticated. If they thought it was good, we better go. So we went last night, and I have to say, you know, if we can put stuff like that on in the island without bringing anyone across, it's absolutely staggering.
Well, I mean, we have got some terrific production people. I think it was the Two Feathers Productions who put it on.
The Two Feathers, right.
Put that on. They put it on Jersey Boys last year as well. And as you say, a lot of our productions just stand up against the West End or any big city, I think.
I would swear you could have taken that to the West End any time. I knew The Little Shop. Anyone my age has seen The Little Shop. But I'd forgotten what a great show it was anyway, and they really put it across. The guy who was the dentist had us in stitches. He was brilliant. And it was just great. If you're hesitating to go, anyone out there, just dithering about it, there's only two more nights left. Get the ticket and go. It'll be the best night out you've had in a long, long time.
Okay. All right, Juliet. Thanks for calling today.
Okay.
Very good.
Bye, Andy.
Good to hear from you. It's always good to have a trustee of Manx Radio on there. Juliet's one of our trustees, and enjoyed that. If you were at Little Shop of Horrors, it's quite a complicated show, isn't it? Kind of run-down flower shop. And I think Jack Divers was starring in that. Anyway, Little Shop of Horrors. I hope you enjoyed it, and I hope you do enjoy it if you're going as well. And thanks to that. And what about 125 years of the Gaiety Theatre? Crikey. And it was wonderful to see Mervyn Russell Stokes at the 125th anniversary of that fantastic. The cake looked very nice. Didn't get any cake. Andrew's with us now. Hi, Andrew.
Hi there, Andy. On that subject of the Gaiety, which is not what I was calling, but let's not forget, please, that I believe it was at the instigation of the amateur societies, with pressure put on Tynwald, that Tynwald managed to save the theatre.
Well, it was so close. I think they were literally a weekend away from it being knocked down.
Correct, correct. I had two items today, please, Andy.
Okay.
Firstly, was yesterday's sitting and Motion 32 brought by Joni Farger regarding that Tynwald is of the opinion that, in accordance with obligations under international law, the United Kingdom should not provide defence, security or intelligence support to any state that is engaging in or credibly alleged to be committing war crimes, crimes against humanity or serious breaches of international law under formal investigation by competent international bodies for such violations, and that the Chief Minister should write to the Government of the United Kingdom to convey the view of Tynwald in this regard. Just the opinion of Tynwald.
Yeah.
Okay. And disappointingly, and for some reason, Mr. David Ashford, on behalf of Comyn, and presumably therefore the Chief Minister,
yeah,
put forward an amendment to the motion, which was actually passed unanimously, but took out that the Chief Minister had to do a copy, cut and paste, put it on a piece of paper with Sir Keir Starmer's name on it and 10 Downing Street, sign it and send it to him.
Really?
So all I can believe there is that somebody thought that by doing that, there would be some severe repercussions for the Isle of Man, as is, being the UK government turning against the Isle of Man and doing something. I mean, it's just, I mean, I can't believe why that otherwise that that motion that asked for the Chief Minister to write to the government of the United Kingdom to convey the view of Tynwald would be deleted. I mean, it's appalling. It's that people don't have the, how shall I say, in basically, the guts to actually do something and send something to somebody. I mean, it's only somebody's opinion. We're all grown-ups. I'm sure Keir Starmer will go, ah, okay, and put it to the side, and that's it. But at least it would have been sent to him. Somebody can't even be bothered to do that. That's what that sounds like. I don't know who else agrees with that. And the second item, please, is have you, by any chance, been able to look at the and hear the interview that another independent broadcast journalist has done with a former politician?
I think you're talking, is it Paul Moulton and Chris Robertshaw?
Correct.
I've not heard it, no.
Oh, right, okay. It is very, very disturbing that it looks like there's been a whistleblower to Mr. Robertshaw about the Employment and Equalities Tribunal, how it's made up and who the people on it are. And from what's been disclosed that Mr. Robertshaw has found is that somebody from the Attorney General's Department, and my research, and I may be wrong and I'll apologise if I am, is a Mr. David Keats, has applied for, and presumably with the acceptance of the Attorney General, Mr. Walton Waterberg, and then via the Appointments Commission and its members, been made a member of the Employment and Equalities Tribunal. So now you have somebody on a tribunal in whereby a case may be brought against the government, and on that tribunal is a member of the government's legal team.
Hmm.
And this has actually gone through, and so we have the AG implicated here, because he surely must have consented to one of his team sitting on that tribunal. And then we have the Appointments Commission, and they've the Appointments Commission, Mr. Alan Tear, this is public information, Mr. Alan Tear, Ms. Kim Corlett, Mr. Stephen Crajean, Mr. Paul Coppell, and Ms. Christina Thompson have approved this appointment and given a warrant to the person from the AG's commission, the AG's department. And then we also have, as Chris Robertshaw says, the committee chaired by the Justice Minister Jane Poole Wilson. I mean, it's all being, the perception of this is that it's all going to be effectively whatever cases come to that tribunal could be, how shall I use the word, massaged.
Okay.
So that nothing affects the AG's department, which, if we all remember, got a complete, and as Chris Robertshaw says, got a complete face slap for the Rosalind Ranson handling. So it's actually, the perception is that that supposedly independent Employment and Equalities Tribunal has now been corrupted by the AG's office.
Okay. Well, I haven't
appalling.
I haven't seen that, so I'll definitely.
Well,
take,
I would urge other listeners to find that and look at it and contact their MHK to have something done about this situation.
Okay. All right. I appreciate that.
Cheers,
Andrew. Thanks for calling today. Good to hear from you. And Kevin's with us now. Hi, Kevin.
Hi, Andy. Just a quick call that's following on from what David was saying.
Yeah.
I was on yesterday. You know my background in the trade. He's had the solar panel fit that he was saying there, and you mentioned about why more solar panels not fitted on other buildings or public buildings.
Well, the thing is, the government keep banging on about this sustainable future and net zero, and they've got one of the biggest estates on the Isle of Man. Surely they should be sticking some solar panels up.
Yes, well, there's a bit of a story behind that, but I've just come back from, I was on holiday and I was in Greece, and I've visited just two or three of the Greek islands, the small Greek islands. One of them was Patmos, Paros, and Malvasia. Now, they're all small islands, a similar size to the Isle of Man, and they've all got, every single building has solar panels and a hot water cylinder on the top of the roof. Now, obviously, there's a reason for that because of their climate. But every single building has solar panels. And I think the government is missing a trick there. Instead of a building, well, I know for a fact now, of course, the wind turbines, that's been shelved because that won't be going ahead. But the government should be providing a grant like it did with the warm, I think there was a grant, wasn't there, for warm housing grant for insulation?
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
If they provided a grant for every building or every private building, every homeowner on the islands to install their own solar panels and hot water system, you don't even have to have the battery, but you could have the power wall or the battery storage as well if you'd like. And then you can take advantage of the feed-in tariff that the Manx Utilities supply. There's so many options there, and that would be a much better solution than the big blue-ribboned capital project of the wind turbine.
So why do you think the government isn't doing it?
I don't. Well, I think it's political. I think Mr. Cannon obviously wants his blue ribbon moment to cut the tape on the project, and he wants that. There's a reason why it's going to be built or was going to be built down in the south of the island, because it's up on a hill and it's visible for miles around, and he wants that to be seen. But having people install discrete solar panels on public or on their own buildings, houses and apartments, obviously, that's not quite as sexy as having a big wind turbine project. So I think I think there's a little bit of a legacy there that the government want to be known for. But a much better solution now would be to encourage people to install solar panels. And of course, that would generate much work in the construction sector as well.
But not everybody. I mean, it's long thousands to get solar panels, isn't it?
Yes, so I think you are looking at, I think, between about 12 and 20,000. It's not cheap, but my next door neighbour has it installed. It was installed by a local reputable company, and he's not paying for it upfront. It's not a capital expenditure on the homeowner. He's leasing that over 10 years, because otherwise you can't afford it. So
right.
I don't know what he paid for it, but there are ways. It's just like when you buy a car, you don't buy a £50,000 car outright. You lease the car, and then when you move on to the next car, you just take the hit on the depreciation rather than the capital. So there are ways and means, and the government should be moving on this, and other countries have done it. And I think, you know, David Quirk is absolutely right. So I follow with interest how he gets on with his.
How far away do you think Irish Stain wind turbine is?
Well, I do have connections there with because I do know that project has been postponed, and logistically it was never going to go ahead anyway. So I don't think there was any fear of any ecological threat, because it was never going to happen. Just logistically installing those turbines, the transportation, the installation of the substations and the groundings of the cables, it was just never going to happen. It was never the right place to build those wind turbines. It's a shame. I think they could have done it elsewhere. And I think there are a place for wind turbines, but as a wider green initiative, wind turbines, solar panels, you've already got the energy from waste plant that generates its own power. You know, there's so much they could have done, and they just went for the big grandiose design that was obviously never going to be like HS2. It was never ever going to be built because it was just too big.
We've spent hundreds of thousands of pounds on consultants and paperwork.
I think it's much more than that, Andy. I think it's running into millions. I think we'll never know. It's a bit like the Liverpool landing stage, isn't it? We'll never know the full cost. There were many consultations that went ahead looking at the viability of the project and the ecological impact. And I think it's just ran out of time now, and I don't think it won't be built in this administration, and I think it will be shelved in the next administration completely, like HS2 has been.
Okay.
But getting back to a positive note, I think, yeah, David's done the right thing, install solar panels, but I think there should be an incentive by the government to, even if they just contribute,
yeah,
5,000, you know, they have done it before with other things, but they are missing a trick there.
Okay, all right. Appreciate it, Kevin.
Thanks, Andy.
Good to hear from you. Thanks for having a good weekend. 29 minutes past 12. Robert's on now. Hi, Robert.
Hi, how are you? One thing the guy said just leads on from the guy before. He didn't really talk about the money side of things, did he? In terms of like where the money's actually going to perpetuate from and things like that, did he?
The money for what?
The wind turbines.
Oh, well, we'll pay for
Where's
that.
Where's it coming from?
Oh, it's from us.
Where's it coming from?
It comes from us. We pay that. We get sent the bill. It's called tax.
Yeah, but we get it returned to us, don't we?
In what way?
Well, because it's free energy, isn't it?
Free? Ooh. Nothing's free in this world, Robert.
Well, can I just say a big thanks to the Manx Utilities Water Authority, thanks.
Why is that?
Because I enjoy the water.
It is fine quality water, isn't it?
I have to say, I could fill a paddling pool with it on Terry Tips today.
And the good thing is, if anybody's come, I mean, lots of people have moved to the Isle of Man since COVID. And I think one of the things that will always hit anybody with a kettle is it doesn't fur up a kettle. You don't get any calcium deposits in a kettle on the Isle of Man or in a washing machine either. It's very good for that.
So it's good for a cup of tea.
Oh, fantastic for a cup of tea.
I think that's the plan. Right, that's the end of the call.
Go and have a cup of tea. Thank you, Robert. Have a good weekend. Claire Christian MHK has been responding to comments from the Ramsey MHK Laurie Hooper, where he described the government as fundamentally dishonest. His words, fundamentally dishonest, and said he had zero confidence in her ability. Of course, Mr. Hooper used to have her job before that, and he was in Comin. It came after Timwell backed a motion to cover a £15.3 million overspend on healthcare, something Mr. Hooper voted against. Claire Christian.
I wish he'd supported the supplementary vote. I find it strange that there's a man here that's calling for more funding for the health service, but yet didn't support the additional funding.
But what he said was he fundamentally doesn't believe that government, I guess that means yourself because you're the health minister, are being honest about the funding needs of the health service.
So I think it's important to distinguish between a disagreement and dishonesty. So decisions in government are rarely, rarely simple, but they are made with transparency and integrity. So the ministerial code is quite clear about the need for honesty, and if he has an evidence that ministers have behaved dishonestly, then he should submit that evidence through the correct channel. Disagreement over policies is not dishonest. That's politics. In terms of the specific point that he made about the doctor's pay award, let's be very clear, and so that there's no confusion, the doctor's pay award was funded by the underspend within the DHSE for the year. Our approach to the pay award was transparent and consistent with the information outlined in the memorandum, and I stand by that statement I made at the time, which were based on the best information available and in good faith. He mentioned, obviously, that he thought that I didn't know what was in my own documents, but I refute that. I'm very familiar with what's in both the mandate and the operating plan, but I think it's important not to mischaracterise strategic planning as simple cutting services. So what that means is the intention is to protect core services and not to undermine them. And so it's about making the system sustainable so we can protect the core people and rely on it.
Former Minister Hooper has no confidence in you as minister and believes that every minister is dishonest.
It is really disappointing that he clearly believes that making inflammatory and personal attacks is any way helpful or achieves any possible outcome. Phil, my focus continues to be firmly on the future and the work ahead. I take my responsibilities to Timwell extremely seriously, and I've never knowingly been dishonest, and nor would I ever do so. But if Mr. Hooper says he cannot support this government because he believes it's fundamentally dishonest, then I'm bemused as to why he is still both in his positions within the DOI and DEFA. I wonder why he hasn't resigned from both of those positions if he truly believes that.
Claire Christian, MHK, she's on Man in Line in a few weeks' time, so we'll be able to talk to her in detail about that. Have you got any thoughts on this? I mentioned, let's congratulate again. Chris Martin won the vacant seat in South Ward in Ramsey. 278 votes. There was a turnout of 21% for the by-election in Ramsey. Not bad. At Port Erin, the two vacant commissioner seats were filled by Jimmy Cubbon and Carl Drinkwater. 331 votes. 19%. Turnout in Port Erin, 564 ballots cast in the village. Some people have noted, sent messages into me about DOI people ticketing cars in Tesco in Lake Road in Douglas by the river. It's been doing the rounds on social media. DOI's parking team have received a complaint about abandoned vehicles in the car park. So apparently they're only ticketing abandoned vehicles, or what they perceive are abandoned vehicles, in the Tesco car park, not enforcing the two-hour limit. Is there a two-hour limit there? I've spent longer than that there. So apparently it may be either people just parking them there and then going on holiday for 3 or 4 weeks. And there was a rusty old caravan in the corner or a mobile home for months in the corner of Tesco. Anyway, that's what it is. DOI ticketing abandoned vehicles in Tesco. That's what that is. France might scrap two public holidays to improve economic productivity. Maybe we should scrap senior race day, says Gaz, because senior race day public holiday doesn't mean anything, does it? Because senior race is on a Saturday. So why are we having a public holiday on a Friday? Manx Care has been given an extra $15 million, but the Isle of Man government explained, as the Isle of Man government explained, where the 2% health tax has gone, says Gaz. Oh, we'll mention this, and somebody else, Southern Andy, said we went to see the Little Shop of Horrors on Wednesday night. Absolutely fabulous. Shame nothing was mentioned about the theatre on its 125th anniversary on that date. However, congratulations to everybody involved in the Little Shop of Horrors.
It's hot. It's here. It's the Lifestyle Furniture Summer Sale. Enjoy sensational special offers throughout our stunning showroom. Save on our most beautiful beds, sumptuous sofas, living and dining furniture, and so much more. Plus, there's 20% off art and accessories. And don't forget to visit our brand new garden furniture marquee for truly great outdoors. The Lifestyle Furniture Summer Sale. Now on at Snugborough Trading Estate, Union Mills. It's everything your home's been waiting for.
It's a tough time for businesses. Not sure what to do to turn things around? Let Nicola Bowker & Co. guide you through. We've helped hundreds of businesses to success. Accountants and tax advisors to businesses on the Isle of Man.
Where has a five-star selection of hand-picked quality cars?
Manx Car Store!
Where are you guaranteed a five-star friendly professional service?
Manx Car Store!
And where has five-star prices on cars covering all budgets? That's right, Manx Car Store on Kirby Farm Industrial Estate, open 7 days a week. To see their range of quality cars and over 250 five-star reviews, just visit manxcarstore.com or find them on Facebook. Manx Car Store, a place you can really trust.
It's nearly time to enjoy a true celebration of Manx life. A fantastic, fun-filled weekend for all the family, whatever the weather. The 2025 Southern Agricultural Show. On Saturday the 26th and Sunday the 27th of July, come and see the livestock exhibits, local Manx traders, food and drink stalls, and the climactic Grand Parade with entertainment all weekend long. Under 16s go free. Open 9:30 a.m. to 6 p.m. both days at Orisdale Farm, Ballasalla, right on the bus route so you can leave the car at home. Visit southernshow.org or find us on Facebook for more information. It's a show not to be missed. The Southern Agricultural Show with your nation station, Manx Radio.
The latest edition of Manx Radio's Breath Mindfulness podcast with Karen Hardman is available now.
Imagine you are spending time in a rainforest retreat.
Brought to you by the Good Health Store on Station Road in Port Erin.
You acknowledge the tightness releasing as the warmth of the light brings you back to self-care.
Tropical Paradise Retreat, the latest in the Breath Mindfulness series with Karen Hardman, and available now as a podcast at manxradio.com.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Howard's with us now. Hi, Howard.
Hello, Andy. Just listen to what people are saying about that. I saw the other day on the internet the DOI booking people down at the Tesco. I wonder how many of those that are down at Tesco now, supposedly, allegedly abandoned, were in the Lord Street car park before they had to be shifted.
Well, there may be some there.
Yeah, because, you know, Tesco, they're unable to book them. They will have a company that looks after their car park, but they had to, a couple of years ago, when people were parking there and going to work, they were putting tickets on themselves, stickers on the windows, but they had to stop in case they damaged the car because they don't have jurisdiction. So it is actually, as it says, down to the DOI to look after it, I think. But we've got one that's parked up around this way, and when you check on the internet, the last time it was road taxed was 2019.
So it's untaxed?
Hmm?
On, yeah, a public road?
Well, it's on a park.
Wow.
Which, for all intents and purposes, part of the public highway.
Well, surely that must be abandoned then if it's not been taxed, and it won't be being driven either, presumably no insurance.
Exactly. So, where are the wardens, or are they just going for the easy meat?
Has anybody reported that vehicle, Howard?
I don't know.
Well, the thing
I
is,
haven't.
Well, unless somebody reports it, I mean, I don't think they go around roaming looking for rogue vehicles. I think they act on reports.
Well, it wouldn't take much if they spot these. They can go into the same website as everybody else can, and they can see exactly when that vehicle was last taxed.
Yeah.
They can just look on their website. It's a government website.
and you can tell exactly when. It won't tell you who or what, but it'll tell you when it was last text. And I know somebody told me this, that, oh, he said that thing, that was text 2019, so it must have been somewhere lurking.
Well, it just makes you wonder, why would anybody keep an abandoned vehicle? Because, I mean, there are people, the people who advertise on Manx Radio, they'll take scrap cars and you can get a few bob for them. I don't know why they don't just phone up one of the companies and pocket the cash.
But we used to have a motorhome here at one time, and eventually the school complained, and it was taken away. It was lifted and taken away. There's been three or four at least around our way that's been lifted and taken away. So it's as I say. It was only just when I heard you mention that they were booking them. I thought, ah, Low Street car park's empty now. Where did all those go to?
Well, and there were a lot of cars in Low Street car park, weren't there?
There was. And I think it was used primarily as a dumping ground.
Well, do you remember there were at the back of the bus stops there, I think there were four mobile homes.
Yep. The bus company were using one. I don't know if it was a mobile home or a trailer thing as an information bureau. That was there, and people could go to that. But I don't know how often it was open or otherwise. But one of the vehicles down there belonged to the bus van, and I'm not even sure if it's there now, because going up through there, you got to keep your eye out when you're driving. But that place is empty now. It looks strange to be empty, but where did all those cars go to?
Well, it makes you wonder, doesn't it? And it because the promenade's lost a lot of parking spaces since the revamp, you just wonder where everybody is parking.
Yeah, and if they knock what we used to call Trimble Street School, Fairfield School, that'll just become another car park.
Okay, so, all right.
Okay, good. That's all it was.
Have a good weekend at the Camera Obscura, Howard.
I'm not up there this weekend.
Oh,
we've
Howard.
Got family over.
Oh, my word.
Yeah.
How will they
actually
cope?
It's for the cycling. And one of our good and great, Steve Jockin, he's over. That's the son-in-law.
Oh, right. Oh, the Gran Fondo.
The Gran Fondo, yeah.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, fantastic.
He's up in Ramsey at the moment. And the grandson and the great-granddaughter, so we got the family over.
Good. Will you be cycling up there, Howard?
In my mind, yes.
Okay. Have a good weekend. Thanks for calling.
Okay, take care.
All right, the Gran Fondo cycling event's on this weekend. Various road closures in place. Tomorrow, restrictions around the Murrock Park, Park Road, North Shore Road and Ballaclone Road in Ramsey, 2:30 to 4:30. Sunday, a number of routes around the Isle of Man are going to be affected. Best you get all the details at grandfondoisleofman.com. That's all one word, all lowercase, grandfondoisleofman.com. And if anybody's, if you're involved in it, then have a good weekend. Hope the weather holds. I bet your caller's happy. The camper van he always mentions in Lancaster Road has been moved. Has it been moved, Steve C? The news suggests the Isle of Man government may buy 42 properties from the Manx Development Corporation. Wasn't the arm's length MDC funded by Isle of Man government to develop sites? Are we paying twice? Is it true the old nurses' home is going to be a retirement home for former MHKs and MLCs? That's 762. I don't think so. However, it's a very stylish building. I mean, it really is a stylish job. Congratulations on that. I don't know whether it was on time, on budget, but I mean, it is a very nice building. Manx Development Corporation says Andrea is another arm's length government department. Also, if you get work done with a grant, you have to use a tradesman registered with Construction Isle of Man. Why? They're not a regulatory body, don't carry out checks on those registered, and tradesmen have to pay to be on it, says Andrea. Is that true? Surely, if they put solar panels on all government buildings, that's going to have an adverse impact on the MUA's revenue, says H. Well, the financial model is going to change as the years go on, as we get more and more self-sufficient, whether it's either onshore or offshore wind or solar panels, whatever it's going to be. Could even be geothermal. You never know. You never know. But surely, this is what they want. So they can't have the cake and eat it. Either we are going to be super self-sufficient, or we're not. If ground source heat pumps and everything, if we're going to have those, then that's going to be less work for the power station, surely. It's not even paid off yet, is it? Well done to We went to see Little Shop of Horrors again. Absolutely fabulous. Really enjoyed it. Lots of people loving this. Some of Comin are back, and some backbenchers aren't in touch with reality or the constituents. Look at the tourist tax they want to bring in. What does the industry think of that? Surely they need to listen to the people, not just to each other. And Dick says, following on the public being stopped cutting DOI's grass by them and the commissioners for being uninsured, I was wondering, if they don't want the public pushing a mower over a bit of DOI grass without insurance, what's the difference between a little mower and a mother and pushchair going over the same piece of grass without insurance? Or are the bureaucrats about to ban pushchairs like mowers as well? It's that daft. You could ask Mr. Cannon on Tuesday for his view on this ridiculous bit of jobs worthiness by the DOI and the commissioners. Thanks also to the 313, it is, just asking how many solar panels will fit on a terraced house and how many of them are needed to run a household. Well, you don't really have them, I think, to run the whole household. You have them to help with this. And there is a big capital cost up front. As Kevin was saying, it costs a lot of thousands and thousands to have them put on. But obviously, as years go on, you supply your own electricity, or certainly portions of it. And you get the opportunity to sell back to the MU at 7p per kilowatt hour. So we pay 29p when you're buying it from the MUA, and they'll buy it off you for 7p. Well, who pays for the solar panel disposal cost? We don't know. But presumably, if the government's advocating that we get solar panels, there'll be some sort of deal where if you get solar panels, then they're going to be recycled at no cost. You would think that, wouldn't you? Regarding the Gaiety, saved by demolition by the government, by volunteers. The Queen's Pier, saved by volunteers. The Steam Railway, saved by Lord Elsa and the Steam Railway Supporters Club. The Cliff Railway, still in situ, hopefully will be restored as is happening on English coastal resorts. Are you talking about the Cliff Railway just below Manx Radio on Douglas Head, the one that goes from just by the Coast Guard up to Douglas Head? Is that still there? And I understand the chairlift, the Falcon Cliff chairlift, is recoverable, isn't it? It would take a lot of work, and I don't know who owns the land between the Falcon Cliff by the is it Sovereign, the wealth people at the top, and the back of the Palace Hotel. But that would be, can you imagine saving the Cliff Railway and putting that on Douglas Head? Thanks also to Dee, who just said, your caller who relayed what had been said by an MHK regarding the AG's office has reiterated what I was told some years ago by then minister in the government. Well, I'll have to watch that today with Mr. Moulton and Mr. Robertshaw. I came through security at Gatwick yesterday, July 17th. I didn't have to remove shoes or watches, and I was allowed bottled water. Really? There may be more. Let's hope it follows at Ronald's Way, says Henry. Have you come through security at Gatwick or London City or anywhere else and not have to take your shoes off or your watch off? I wonder about that. The government's still spending money as if it grows on trees. Presumably it's the reason the DOI aren't cutting overgrown roadside foliage back. Ah, but they're harvesting the plantations. Oh, I got a note in, an official note, by the way, from the DOI about the Tesco car park. The DOI's parking team's taken enforcement action after receiving complaints about abandoned vehicles in the Tesco car park in Douglas, Lake Road, that is, not Little Switzerland. Fixed notices have been placed on several vehicles with owners warned unless they're moved, the DOI will take them after 14 days. The department's got the power to deal with vehicles considered to be abandoned on any land, not just public roads. Tesco said they didn't request the parking enforcement action. Oh, it wasn't them. The DOI's says, Michelle Hayward noted, the DOI's got a duty to deal with vehicles that are illegally parked and seemingly abandoned in car parks. You get that? The DOI has a duty to deal with vehicles that are illegally parked. That's the way. I reported an untaxed car in Onchan. 475 tells me. I reported an untaxed car in Onchan a few years ago, and I was basically told to mind my own business. By whom? It sounds like things haven't changed. Also, every week, new cars are imported here, but no corresponding scrapping of older vehicles. Surely we'll reach saturation point, and then what? Well, the scrap boys do scrap vehicles. They do crush them. They do recover it. So that does happen. And I think some of the cars end up whizzing round the track at Onchan. Is the stock car still going at Onchan? I think, thank the Lord, we had the likes of Mervyn Russell Stokes around. Otherwise, the theatre would have become another bus station or Summerland. Too many poor decisions have been made by our so-called leaders, says Tony. Well, Mervyn Russell Stokes, I think, made it his life's work. So he is to be very much... And, of course, the current staff, Seamus Shea and the team at the Gaiety Theatre do a sense... I don't know whether... If you take people, if you take visitors or friends or family from across into the Gaiety Theatre, I mean, it really is world class, isn't it? You could put that anywhere. You could put that on Fifth Avenue in New York. You put it in the West End of London. It is a fantastic theatre, and it's ours. Oh, the Cunningham's chairlift was scrapped about 5 years ago. The one from Little Switzerland up to what's now the Business Park used to be Cunningham's camp. And apparently the land... for the Falconcliff lift is owned by Dandara. Wow. I didn't know that. The land that Dandara owned that bank, so presumably Dandara own the Falconcliff chairlift. Regarding the message about the DOI not cutting weeds on in roadside areas, I've taken to doing it myself in Onchan, and they obviously can't be bothered, says Nick. Now, abandoned cars near the entrances to the DOI depot in Hills Meadow are on double yellow lines, says 382. Are they abandoned? Are they abandoned?
Hello, this is Doug Farragher. In conjunction with Manx Radio, I'd like to invite you to join us and learn something about our native Gaelic tongue, the language of man.
Hello, Betty.
Hi, I just want to say a big thank you to Audiology. I went there earlier this week, and especially to Stephen for help with giving me Bluetooth on my hearing aids.
Betty, you're Betty Bluetooth now.
That's all, really. Thank you so much.
Well, that's fantastic. Now you can... I mean, you could hear quite well before, couldn't you, Betty?
No, not really.
So you're now with us.
Hopefully, but I still miss things, I'm afraid. My hearing is not very good.
All right. Well, we wish you well. I'm glad. What's his name again in Audiology?
Stephen. Steve.
Steve. Okay. Steven. That's great, Betty. We're glad you're hooked up to Bluetooth now.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks for calling. You may have heard this voice that it comes often during Man in Line.
Hello. This is Doug Farragher. In conjunction with Manx Radio, I'd like to invite you to join us and learn something about our native Gaelic tongue, the language of man.
Well, I mentioned that purely because we've got a message from Culture Vanin as part of its Tresht initiative. Whether you've got a project, have you got a project for celebrating the Manx language? Doug Farragher was a Manx language activist, author, and of course he was a radio personality. Doug was on Manx Radio. He was very much promoting the Manx language, best known for his English Manx dictionary, Farragher's dictionary, the first modern dictionary in Manx, the first modern dictionary in the Manx language. He was involved in the promotion of the Manx language, culture, and of course nationalist politics throughout his life. Anyway, if you think you've got a project to celebrate the Manx language, Culture Vanin have got a grant marking a year-long celebration next year for the Year of Manx Language. The deadline to apply for the first round of funding is Friday the 25th of July. So that's a week today, and you can find out more. Go to manxradio.com if you've got a project to celebrate the Manx language as part of Tresh. If Laurie Hooper is so adamant that the place is in a mess, why doesn't he resign? He's happy to take his wage and backchat everybody, but... Laurie, make a proper stance. That's Alan, though. He doesn't have to. He's entitled to have his say. That's it. Thanks to Chris. Have a great weekend. Back on Monday.
W-I-N-T.